Our next case this morning is case number 101900, Fry versus Thompson Steel Company. Ms. Sussman.
Good morning, and I apologize, I have a little bit of a cold. But may it please the Court, we respectfully request that this Court reverse the decision below for two reasons. First, the District Court's order contravenes ERISA because it rewrites the plan's term in a way that eliminates the offset provision at issue in this case. And second, the company was neither arbitrary nor capricious when it offset Mr. Fry's pension benefit because his workers' comp settlement fell squarely within the offset provision that is at issue here.
Actually, it looks to me like the company's definitional section of the plan rewrote the offset provision rather than the district court because there's a tension between that definitional section and its incorporation by reference of the definition of disability that's in the disability pension clause and the offset provision, and that's why we're here. So how do we reconcile that discrepancy in the plan?
Well, we reconcile it by looking at Section 1, and Section 1 does not define either the phrase in the nature of or permanent disability. And I do note that if you look at the master plan that governs the entire terms of the plan and not just Schedule C, Section 1 to the master plan does in fact state that the definitions control throughout the plan unless the context dictates otherwise. In fact, if you look at the predecessor to Schedule C of the plan, in 2007, the various plans of this company were consolidated and merged into one pension plan. And the steelworker plan that's at issue here was appended as Schedule C to the plan. So the predecessor plan, which is at Administrative Record 19, shows that in the definitional section to the Schedule C, it did say that the Schedule 1 definitions apply throughout unless the context dictates otherwise. Now, ultimately, that phrase was dropped when they merged these plans together in 2007, and I suspect that someone wasn't thinking through when they were adding the definitions together how dropping that simple phrase, unless the context dictates otherwise, might impact the later provisions of the case. And ultimately, that's why we're here, I think, 4 years later.
Right. Well, who should bear the cost of that omission? The company or the pensioner?
Well, it's not just bearing the cost of the omission. I think we still get to the same result ultimately because if you look at, well, first of all, again, I think we fall back to the words permanent disability and in the nature of are not defined in Section 1. And so the district court has ordered us to use the definitions of Section 3.4, the disability pension, for interpreting Section 4.8.
Actually, but the plan does that. The district court was just interpreting the plan.
Well, again, I would say that the plan only says the definitions in Section 1, and that only defines disability. It doesn't define permanent disability. And when we later look to the definition of, when we later look to Section 4.8, it requires an offset when the plan participant receives a settlement, a workers' comp settlement, for an injury that causes disability in the nature of a permanent disability. Now, the definition of Section 3.4 equates the word disability with permanent incapacity. And if we were to substitute permanent incapacity into Section 4.8, it would permit or require the offset only where a participant receives settlement monies for an injury that causes a permanent incapacity in the nature of a permanent incapacity. It just doesn't make sense. It's like saying a broken leg in the nature of a broken leg. By including that phrase in the nature of sandwiched between those two terms, the drafters were obviously expressing an intent to include within the sphere of the offset something that's akin to or like a permanent disability, but not quite. And so in looking at what the plan administrator considered during the claim review, all they had at the time were the settlement agreements that the plaintiff himself signed when he settled his claim in 2007 with the company. And those settlement agreements state that his injuries were permanent partial disabilities. Now, the plaintiff's brief suggests that there's language in the settlement agreement suggesting that they were temporary disabilities. In fact, that's not correct. If you look at the settlement agreements, the only reference to temporary disability relates to the period of time, the very brief period of time in 2005 when Mr. Fry was out of work due to his shoulder injury.
Now, permanent partial disabilities, are they funded from the same part of the funds of the retirement plan?
They are not, Your Honor. They are funded by the company. But the company also funds the benefit pool. So, you know, ultimately, what this offset is a workers' comp offset. It is designed to recoup exactly the type of funds that Mr. Fry was paid here. And so ultimately, in receiving the $80,000 at the time that he signed his settlement agreement with the company, that was $80,000 that he had in his pocket. And this negotiated benefit, this negotiated offset, provides that is $80,000 that he has in his pocket that would provide him a certain level of benefit along with all the other bargaining unit members during the period of time of his retirement. And I think no one suggests here that Mr. Fry was entitled to a disability retirement. And that is another reason that we suggest that the plaintiffs and the district court's proposed reading of the that would require us to use the definitions of Section 3.4 in 4.8 would rewrite the terms of the plan and therefore fundamentally contravene ERISA. And that our argument is founded in the last proviso of Section 4.8. In that section, it prohibits the plan administrator from offsetting a benefit from the it prohibits the administrator from offsetting any workers' comp settlements against the disability pension. So to explain, what the plaintiff argues is that we can only apply the offset if he is permanently incapacitated. And he argues that since he's not permanently incapacitated, the offset shouldn't apply to him. But the last proviso of Section 4.8 makes clear that we can't offset against someone who is permanently incapacitated. And therefore, the net effect would be that this offset would never come into play. You can't, on the one hand, require a disability pension, require a permanent incapacity in order to be eligible for the offset, when the express terms of the plan itself say that you can't apply the offset against someone who is permanently incapacitated. And for that reason, because ERISA requires us to give effect to all of the plan's terms and read even sometimes inconsistent terms in a way that will give effect to all of the plan's terms, we respectfully suggest that what the district court has ordered us to do is simply impossible. And therefore, I would also ask the plaintiff, if not in this circumstance, then when? Because when you have that type of a conflicting interpretation, when could we ever apply this offset against someone if, in fact, we had to use the definitions of Section 3.4?
But you'd have to amend your definition and not incorporate the disability definition by reference, which is what nullifies the offset provision. Well, that's what we've got here, is a definitional section which incorporates the disability pension definition of disability, which is to say it has to be a permanent incapacity, in other words, a permanent total disability. You know, that's the term that would be used in workers' compensation law, and that completely nullifies the offset provision.
Well, I respectfully...
So you've got to rewrite your definition, but in the meantime, he gets his pension.
I would respectfully disagree, and I would suggest that the definitional section, again, only defines disability and permanent incapacity. It does not define either the phrase in the nature of or a permanent disability.
It defines disability. I mean, it says permanently incapacitated, permanent incapacity and disability shall have the meaning stated in Section 3.4. And
which
disability is the term that's used in the offset provision.
Again, I think if we look back to the master plan and the Section 1 definitions there, it does reference unless the context dictates otherwise.
That was omitted, right?
That was omitted from the Schedule C to the plan. That's correct. But the master definition plan says the definitions. I think the point is that the intent of the drafters here is to, if the context requires otherwise, and that's what we have here. We have very specific, precise language of Section 4.8 that says an injury causing disability in the nature of a permanent disability. It's a workers' comp offset. And here, Mr. Fry did receive a substantial settlement award, $80,000, more than $80,000, for a workers' comp injury that he himself characterized as a permanent partial disability. And so we find it perplexing that he could now argue that he is not subject to this offset, which was drafted and intended to capture exactly this kind of a workers' comp settlement, to suggest that it should now not apply to him. This is something that the company has done, that has applied this offset like this in the past, and it did so with Mr. Fry. And again, we suggest that what the district court has done has argued for Mr. Fry what Mr. Fry should have argued during the claim review below. All the plan administrator had were these workers' comp settlement agreements that characterized his injuries as permanent partial disabilities. When it looked to the terms of the plan in Section 4.8, which said a disability in the nature of a permanent disability, and again, to suggest if we transplanted the language of Section 3.4 into that section, it would say a disability or a permanent incapacity in the nature of a permanent incapacity. The plan administrator never interpreted the provision Section 4.8 to have such a confusing construction. Instead, they viewed the offset to be entirely different from the Section 3.4, which applies to a disability pension. And again, I come back to the point of, if not here, then when? Because if we cannot apply the offset in the context of someone who has a workers' comp injury that's in the nature of a permanent disability, a permanent partial disability, on the one hand, but you have to be, the proviso prohibits us from applying the offset against someone who has qualified for a disability pension and thus is permanently incapacitated, then the offset would never come into play.
The retirement committee didn't rely on this language, leaving wiggle room about unless the context requires otherwise. That's in the, is it in the preamble to the master plan? Is that where it is?
It's in the definitional section of the master plan, and it's in the predecessor to the Schedule C to the plan as well.
The retirement committee didn't invoke that. Is that a problem here?
It's not a problem here. What the retirement committee did say, though, was that it found his permanent partial disabilities to be in the nature of a permanent disability, and that was the basis for their decision, ultimately applying the offset against Mr. Fry.
And that master plan definitional language was not reincorporated into Schedule C, but was operative at the time of this pensioner's retirement?
His retirement was in 2007, so it was at the time that the plan was merged. It was during that process, and ultimately the plan closed, which is why he elected his retirement.
Right, but the language then in the master plan was operative or was not?
The master plan was operative, yes. And I think what we come back to here is that what we are reviewing the plan administrator's actions under is an arbitrary and capricious standard. That is a highly deferential standard of review. Is it a rubber stamp? No. But what the plaintiff needed to show was that the plan administrator was outside all reasonable bounds in having concluded or made the decision that it made. And what we suggest here is that the company, in fact, was not unreasonable, that because Mr. Fry characterized his injuries as permanent partial disabilities, because of the plan administrator's interpretation gives effect to all of the plan's terms, that, in fact, the plan administrator was abundantly reasonable. And for that reason, we request that you reverse the decision of the district court.
Thank you. Mr. Friedland. I'm sorry, Ms. Friedland.
Good morning, and may it please the court. I first want to begin with sort of a response on, there's been a lot of discussion on what the intent of the plan drafters, what that was. And because both of the parties here agree that this plan is unambiguous, the committee shouldn't have been permitted to go beyond the four corners of the plan in its interpretation to look at what the intent of the drafters was. And that, I think, also includes this discussion of whether the master plan was invoked and whether the definitions in the master plan are also somehow then included into the definitions of Schedule C, which is, I submit, the entirety of the contract that is in dispute right now. Mr. Fry was a steel worker for 42 years. The company is refusing to pay his pension benefits in contravention of the party's agreement. Because Mr. Fry made valid claims under the Illinois Workers' Compensation Law for injuries he incurred while working for the company, we're asking that this court affirm the trial court's judgment because the retirement committee's interpretation and application of Section 4.8 of the plan is arbitrary and capricious. The committee failed to apply the definition of disability that is expressly set forth in the plan, and as you know, this plan was drafted by the company. Rather, the committee took language from Mr. Fry's workers' compensation settlements and imputed that language into the plan to affect the offset of his pension benefits. While we agree that the committee does have the power to interpret this plan, the committee does not have a power to modify the plan. In making the determination that Mr. Fry had a disability in the nature of a permanent disability, the committee arbitrarily and capriciously relied solely on the language in Mr. Fry's compensation settlement agreements, which characterizes injuries as permanent partial disabilities. To effect the offset, it erroneously took that term and put it right into the plan, rather than use the definition that the company itself set forth in Sections 1, 1.9, and 3.4 of the plan.
Well, there is no dispute that your client's settlement in the workers' compensation claims was for permanent partial disability in both cases.
Right. That is the term that's used in the body of law of Illinois' workers' compensation.
Right. That's a term of art in workers' compensation law. So he's got a permanent partial disability for the two injuries that he suffered. He was compensated accordingly. And but for the definitional section in Schedule C incorporating the disability pension's definition of disability into the offset clause, this would qualify.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So we can take that issue off the table about how to characterize those settlements and whether there was an improper importation of the workers' comp term into the plan. That's just a red herring here. What we're talking about is an interpretation of the provisions of the plan. And would you concede that the definitional section's incorporation by reference of the disability definition, the disability pension definition, nullifies the offset provision?
I'm sorry, could you rephrase that?
The definitional section of Schedule C says for the terms incapacity, permanent incapacity, and disability, use the definition found in 3.4,
right,
which is the section that pertains to disability pensions.
Right.
A disability pension, by virtue of the language of 3.4, is only available upon a total permanent disability. In other words, a permanent incapacity that is total and complete, not a permanent partial disability.
Right.
So by application of that definition to the offset clause, which is in 4.8, no offsets can ever be made.
I think that this offset provision applies to, if this is what we're talking about, two different types of participants. The first, someone who has a disability in the nature of a permanent disability, and the second, someone who has a disability in the nature of a permanent disability and is also receiving this disability pension. The first participant, the clause at issue here, for whatever reason, they could not be receiving a disability pension. So I don't believe that this section is meaningless.
In what circumstance could it be applied?
You know, I don't have a great example of that. We didn't write the plan.
I understand that. That's an argument that you should benefit from poor draftsmanship and your client should get his pension. But it's not an answer to my question. My question was, are there any circumstances under which the offset could be made if your interpretation of Schedule C prevails? I can't think of any.
I can't think of any.
Okay. So you just want the benefit of the poor draftsmanship.
Well, not only that, but I think that these are types of compensation. They're completely different types of compensation. Workers' compensation is a statutory claim, and this is a contractual claim having to do with his retirement benefits. And yes, the money comes from the company, but they are for two different claims. And Mr. Fry, he had these injuries on the job, and he was compensated for them. He worked 42 years. He also should get his pension benefit. So yes, there is a draftsmanship issue here, but I think that there's also a policy issue here of what he is being compensated for and where that is coming from. While we don't dispute that the offset such as this is legal or even common, the plain language of this plan doesn't allow it. A determination that ignores the plain language should be arbitrary and capricious. And that's why we are requesting that the Retirement Committee's determination to offset his pension benefits is arbitrary and capricious.
Well, why isn't the Retirement Committee entitled to reconcile and harmonize the plan provisions in the way that it did here so as to give the offset some meaning?
Because
otherwise
the
it
plan
has no meaning.
The language, to me, and, well, actually both parties agree, is unambiguous. And there is a definition section that it drafted and that it should be obligated to follow. And as you had mentioned earlier, they can always redraft it for future participants.
And why don't you think the definitional section of the master plan, with its wiggle room about unless the context applies or suggests otherwise, why doesn't that apply here?
Well, first of all, in the record, I don't see any indication that that was considered by the Retirement Committee. And when Mr. Fry received letters, and I read those letters as they were coming in, I saw no reference to a master plan. It was the only reference to any section in that plan was Section 4.8. And there's no Schedule C, I don't believe, has any clause or provision that incorporates the master plan. I believe that Schedule C stands alone.
What costs? What was the permanent partial disability payment for? What did it compensate him for?
He had some.
I know the injury, but what? Why did they give him? What was it for? What was it supposed to replace?
For the first injury, he had, I believe, almost 3 months of time off. And then I believe he also had some medical bills. I do think that's outside of the record, but that's my
medical belief. Bills included in the permanent partial disability payment?
Right.
They are.
This is outside of the record, and I'm not really clear on what those were for, but I know that under the Illinois Workers' Compensation Statute, they take, you know, an injury and a percentage of that injury and decide, well, this person should get X amount of dollars because this was their injury. It's very formulaic. And I believe, I mean, that's what the purpose of the statute is.
Then the it's also compensation for lost wages, time off.
Right. So he was off. The first time he was off for nearly 3 months, and the second time he actually had no time off, though.
But the formula doesn't contain a line item for that, I think, which may be responsive to the question that's being asked. It's a formula.
Right. It doesn't. I don't think it details, and certainly these agreements don't detail exactly what, you know, his damages were and what that money goes for. I think it's just a statutory formula, is my understanding of it.
How is the pension calculated?
The pension is calculated. He got a choice when he chose to retire, and it has to do with a number of years, and he got a choice of several retirement, and we assert he should be getting $688.13 a month. The calculation, honestly,
and
I am not clear on it.
Of what? Of years or earnings within certain years? What's the formula that's used to determine a person's?
I don't know the exact formula. I do know he worked for 42 years. During those 42 years, he was expecting to receive a pension.
Is the period when he was off work because of those injuries counted toward his retirement?
I believe so, but I don't know that for sure.
Is a disability pension worth less?
A disability pension?
So that there would be a reason for excluding that from the offset?
I don't know if I don't know the answer to that. Maybe the company would.
But it can be claimed earlier in an employee's work history, so it could potentially be worth less.
Right. The disability pension is for a person who is not yet 65 years old and who has become permanently incapacitated.
But that wouldn't apply if this was a plant closing.
Right.
A permanent disability pension would kick in if you're unable to continue working because of a disability.
Right. Mr. Fry worked 2 years after his first injury, And he only retired because the plant was closing in 2007. He could have continued working. In fact, I believe he wanted to. But for those reasons, he certainly doesn't meet the definition of disability under 3.4 because he was still in a position where he could seek employment for profit. And this disability he had didn't continue for longer than 6 months. If there's any other questions. Therefore, we ask that this court find the retirement committee's determination to offset Mr. Perez's pension benefits is arbitrary and capricious. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Friedman. Ms. Sussman, you have 2 minutes.
Under ERISA, we are required to interpret this plan in a way that gives effect to all of its terms. And because the terms in the nature of and permanent disability are not defined, that is how we get to the 4.8 offset applying to someone who does receive exactly the type of workers' comp offset, exactly the type of workers' comp settlement that Mr. Fry received. Just to clarify, a disability pension is not worth less than a regular pension. It's actually worth more because you get paid over a period of time. And the lost time is counted towards his years of service. The permanent partial disability payment that he received, that $83,000 and change, was a formula that, if you look at the settlement agreement, it's a certain period of time given the percentage of the body that it affects and the part of the body that it affects. There's a formula that they assign, so it's a pure dollar amount. Medical bills fall outside that dollar amount. And so it's the future permanent effect of the injury that he suffered. Again, this was a permanent disability.
What are you trying to recoup? You tried to recoup his medical expenses, too?
No, absolutely not. Just the dollar value that was assigned to the injury that he had. So the $83,000 and change that he has in his pocket as a result of those injuries. Now, keep in mind, he is not precluded from working. We all agree he could continue working. He did continue working. He held his job and continued. And my understanding is that he could continue to work today. The purpose of this offset is to recoup exactly the kind of money that Mr. Fry received, and that is why this offset was applied against him. For these reasons, because the plan terms, we interpret the plan in a way that gives effect to all of the plan terms, because Mr. Fry himself characterized his injuries as permanent partial disabilities, and for all the reasons that we've discussed today, we respectfully request that you reverse the district court's decision.
Thank you. Our thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.